Hello and welcome to a new season of the Further Review podcast for the Buffalo News. I'm Jay Skursky, joined by a very esteemed special guest, also known as my boss, Perrin Keyes, the executive sports editor of the Buffalo News, making his Buffalo News podcast debut. Perrin, welcome.
Thank you. Against my will, but here I am. Thank you for having me, Jay.
Yes. Well, if it's against your will, then I guess it can't be against my will, right?
That's true.
Since
that's very true.
Since you're the boss, yes. you're the guy that is, doling out the assignments. And Perrin, you have been here in Buffalo on the job for a little more than a year, been in the press box for a season's worth of home games. You have yet to see the Bills lose.
That's true.
Inside Highmark Stadium, because last night was their 12th straight win. Second longest home winning streak in history. And I think that may be the most improbable win in that stadium that I have seen or covered, which is saying something. I've been doing this a while and been going to games even as a fan before that. But at one point last night, the Bills, according to Next Gen Stats, had a 1.1% chance win probability. What was going through your mind in the fourth quarter as you're watching that unfold?
Exactly the same thing as what Next Gen Stats was telling us. I mean, it's one. Listen, you can fault the 25,000 or so fans who were leaving the stadium. No, you can't. You can't fault them. I mean, 4 minutes to go and they're down 15 points. I mean, it's as over can possibly be. And particularly given the fact that, I mean, I'm sorry, but this was not exactly what you'd call a performance by the defense that was worthy of the 85 Bears. The Bills defense just could not stop Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, and for that matter, Zay Flowers. And so this is sort of what you're left with, even if, as they did time and time and time again, Josh Allen and his, excellence and the rest of the offense coming alive in the fourth quarter, continuing to score over and over and over again. You had very little faith that the defense was going to come up with a stop or a turnover or anything that was going to be able to slow the Ravens down enough with enough time left to be able to turn that thing around. I mean, that would, again, 1.1% win probability for a reason. And, I'm reminded coming in today to work of the Jack Buck, can't believe what I just saw, World Series call from so many years ago in the A's Dodgers World Series, because that's exactly what you saw.
I was trying to think before we started of a game that was similar, that, the improbable nature. The only one that I keep going back to is such a memorable game was the Bills played the Cowboys on a Monday night and took the ball away five times and managed to lose. They found a way to lose. The difference now is that they have Josh Allen, they have Sean McDermott, they have belief that they're going to win. And so there's 15, they're down 15 points. There's 4 minutes left. We've got some numbers here for you. They're the fourth team since 2000 to win in that situation, trailing by 15 plus in the final 4 minutes. They're the only team ever to do it in regulation, ever. It had never happened before. Team's records in that situation before was 3-2,312. And that's going back to 2000. The Ravens rushed for 235 team yards, 238 exactly, and scored 40 points. Teams to do that before in NFL history were 277-0.
Undefeated.
Now they're 277-1. So you talked about the people that were leaving, and it was jarring to see, right? Because usually when they're leaving early, it's because the game is in hand in the fourth quarter. I was really excited to get home last night at, 2:30, whatever it was. It was later for you because I know what time you were emailing the staff. And I was excited to see whether my son had made it up and stayed up for the game. He had not. And so he turned in, of course. They're losing. He's mad. He's 11. He's got to go to school the next day. So 7 o'clock this morning, first thing that I hear from him, comes into the bedroom and, how bad did they lose? I said, well, buddy, you better go to BuffaloNews.com and find out what happened in this game, right? Because so you wonder how many of people like that turned it off at the end of the third quarter, turned it off midway through the fourth quarter. Just an absolutely remarkable comeback. From a journalism perspective, maybe the hardest game I think I've ever had to cover and write because of, our deadlines and what we do. the changing nature of the game. It felt like a scramble drill for the players, and it felt like a scramble drill from everybody in the press box working too.
From pure selfish standpoint, we're all thinking about, well, geez, how did, and this is, you know, a little peek behind the curtain. I'm not sure how many readers or viewers, listeners actually care about this part, but you know, we're from a selfish standpoint, we're all thinking, you know, if it's a 17-0 game, we can all start working on our stories and start thinking about even, you know, start planning into the following week about all the things that we have to do from a coverage standpoint, because it's all sort of set and settled, you know, by say the third quarter or, you know, early into the fourth quarter or whatever. This, and if you're talking about a game that's going into overtime, this is going to go either way. The narratives start getting set, you know, the other way, the narratives start getting set early. This, you know, you got to basically blow up everything and start all over, because you think it's going to go one way, and now you got to, again, you got to blow up everything and start all over. So, yeah, this was a fire drill for us in the press box, and of course for everybody else who, you know, again, can't believe everything, you know, for the same reason that everybody went to bed probably upset and in a foul mood until they woke up and started having their coffee and sorting through the wreckage and sorting through, well, actually it wasn't the wreckage, I suppose, if you're a Bills fan, but sorting through the pleasure of having to see what their favorite team pulled out of the fire. So no, it was something else. I was sharing with the staff where I was previously. We had to do, the only thing that could even come close was where I was previously was in New Orleans, and we had a game between LSU and Texas A&M that people may remember that was 74-72, eight overtimes that lasted well into the night. And that was that would be the only thing that comes even remotely close to something like this. It's crazy. Just doesn't really cover it. It's you can't even believe what you're seeing. So certainly, if you're a Bills fan, you're waking up and you're happy that your team is on the right side of something like this. Because if you're a Ravens fan, I mean, devastated. Devastated doesn't even cover it. I'm sure you're thinking you did everything. You dominated this game really from the second quarter all the way until about 2 minutes left, or maybe 2.5 minutes left, in regulation. And you maybe even dominated, I'm forgive me for not knowing right off the top of my head, but I'm going to guess you certainly dominated the ground. I mean, in a way that's just, you know, not up for debate. And you dominated the air for most of the game. And what do you have to show for it? You've got a loss. Yet again, you've got a loss, and you just can't believe it. One thing to note, certainly, as I'm sure everybody was aware while they were watching the game on Sunday night, was for the first, well, really three quarters plus, the Buffalo Bills revamped, reshuffled receiving core was pretty quiet. And then certainly came to life when they absolutely had to in the fourth quarter and deep into the fourth quarter. Keon Coleman had a drop early on, didn't seem to be in rhythm. Josh Allen didn't seem to be in rhythm with wide receivers. He wound up completing passes to nine different receivers, but certainly not a lot of downfield plays, not a lot of big plays out of the aerial attack. And then next thing you know, they're going deep and they're making all the big plays they need to make in the aerial attack. Keon Coleman finishes with 112 yards, a deep pass to Joshua Palmer when they absolutely have to have it on the sideline down there late in the game. And the aerial attack, again, comes to life when they absolutely need it. And that probably sort of soothes some of the concerns that Bills fans were probably having for the first 3.5 quarters of the game, Jay.
Through the first three quarters, Keon Coleman, 3 targets, 1 catch, 17 yards. Joshua Palmer, 3 targets, 1 catch, 4 yards. That's 2 catches for 21 yards for those two, who are two of your top three, right? Khalil Shakir at that point had 4 catches, 52 yards. Pretty steady. That's what you expect from Shakir. It was a no-show act for Coleman and Palmer, though, through the first three quarters. To your point, though, Perrin, Coleman finishes after that 8 for 112 with a touchdown. Palmer finishes 5 for 61. You mentioned in the first segment, Perrin, thinking that the Ravens would outgain or had to have outgained, right, just based on the way that game went. It was actually 497-432 in favor of the Bills, which just tells you the remarkable nature of that fourth quarter. Josh Allen, feels like we say this almost weekly, every few weeks, did something that no other player in NFL history has done, threw for 251 passing yards in the fourth quarter alone, and also rushed for two touchdowns. As you might guess, that had never been done in league history. 251 passing yards, you don't have to be a math major, is a 1,004 average over the course of a 60-minute game. It's ridiculous. To say video game numbers doesn't do it justice. When they had to have the plays, obviously Allen's the guy. He's the engineer. He's running the show. But the receivers stepped up. We've got to give them credit. I was hard on Coleman during the game. You know, the two-point conversion play, I think that's a play he has to make. That's why he's here. He has to win those contested catches. That's his specialty. You've got to make it. Yeah, I know he was getting pulled. You look at the replays. His jersey, you can see his shoulder pad because he's being held so much. Should there have been a flag? Probably. Let's just take that play out of the equation, though, for a second. I mean, the guy produced. You know, he had, as you mentioned, he had an early drop. That factors into the 11 targets. So, you know, he caught 8 of the remaining 10 after that first. I think that was the first target he got, was a drop. And so this is the step forward that we needed to see from Keon Coleman. This was what you had heard so much about in the summer and in training camp, the work ethic, the work that he had put in the offseason, the desire to be better, to be what this offense needs, what he was drafted to be, you know, first pick of the second round. You know, it's long forgotten because of the way that this game unfolded, but Dalton Kincaid, 15-yard touchdown play, 15-yard touchdown catch to open the scoring. That's the type of impact play they need from Kincaid. So Kincaid steps up. He finishes 4 for 48 with a touchdown.
The catch on the sideline, too, right before halftime.
Huge.
I mean, how big is that?
Yep.
And let's not forget, to me, this was the moment, I'm not going to call it the moment where the game turned, but it certainly was one of the moments that you absolutely had to have if you're the Bills, which was, let's not forget, the fourth down diving tip drill touchdown catch that Coleman makes. If he's not back there to make that diving grab on fourth down, the Bills don't have a chance at that fourth quarter comeback, that miraculous comeback. Certainly, to me, the whole thing turns on the punch out at Oliver makes. But by the same token, that's neither here nor there unless Coleman makes the grab on fourth down to make the touchdown.
The Bills have shown a remarkable ability to win games in different ways, and last night it was through the passing game. You know, you look at the rushing stats, 13 for 44 with a touchdown for James Cook, but his biggest play came in the passing game. He finishes with 58 receiving yards, 51 on one play, huge play. Ray Davis, nothing. One carry for 2 yards. Even Josh Allen on the ground, 14 attempts, only 30 yards. Yes, he did score the two touchdowns from the 1 yard line. But the point here is that the pass catchers, the receivers, when they needed it, when you're down 15 points with 4 minutes to go, you're throwing the ball. Those guys delivered in a big way. That Palmer play, that route, that throw, that catch, probably the play of the game. And there were several candidates for play of the game, but this is what we, you know, yes, everybody eats. And you mentioned the targets, 10 different players, 9 different receivers making a catch. But sometimes you're going to need guys to take over games. Keon Coleman did that in the fourth quarter of this one.
Sure did. And again, to wrap up, they absolutely had to have those guys step up. Maybe they were a little bit late even announcing their presence, but they had to have those guys step up. When they absolutely needed them, they got them.
And Perrin, you know, we would be derelict in our duties if we didn't at least discuss some of the struggles, right? And there were 56 minutes of struggles for this team, especially defensively. You know, the Ravens put up, we talked earlier about video game numbers. I mean, Derrick Henry, 18 carries, 169 yards, 2 touchdowns. Lamar Jackson, 6 carries, 70 yards. It was the worst fears realized for this Bills defense against this opponent, who we know is formidable. Bills have a lot to sort out here in 6 days' time before week two. Where are they going to go defensively? Where do they find some answers?
Yeah, I handle the live updates during the game at BuffaloNews.com, so these guys can worry about their stories on deadline. And at some point, I made the note of, hey, doesn't this feel a whole lot like that 35-10 game from last year? more than anything else. And that was the one game where the Bills really got blown out, of course, as everybody probably knows and remembers. Derrick Henry finishes 18 carries, 169 yards, 9.4 yards per carry. And I'm sure, Jay, don't you feel like, and everybody else in the stadium and watching at home felt like at some point it was pretty much, you know, name your number at some point. I mean, you know, holes that were enormous where he didn't get touched, not only on some of those touchdown runs, but on many others until at least he got deep into the second or third level. Run fits were difficult to be able to explain away. Listen, you know, before we get too deep into it, first and foremost, Derrick Henry is going to be wearing a gold jacket. Okay, let's start with that. Lamar Jackson is as big a headache as there is in the NFL. Guy's a two-time MVP. Could have arguably been, much to the dismay of Buffalo Bills fans, could have arguably been a third-time MVP last year. He's well on his way to earning a gold jacket himself, okay? And the Ravens are an absolute defensive coordinator's nightmare. We'll start with that, okay? But by the same token, you have to be sound. You have to be, you know, assignment sound, discipline on defense. We saw many times where maybe a defensive end crashes, where he needs to be disciplined. And, you know, Lamar's, before you know it, he's around the end, and he's going for another big game, in addition to scrambling for a 19-yard gain on third down because he's just a magician. Yeah. All that having been said, boy, this is if other teams are even halfway as successful as the Ravens were for the rest of the year in their run game, the Bills are looking at a long year, and they're going to have to figure something out. They're going to have to figure out a better way to fly. We all understand that the Bills, because of how important Taron Johnson is to the offense, we know that their base is nickel, and they're not going to move off of that. We understand that. I know it's been discussed ad nauseum that, hey, maybe they want to, in certain particular games against particular opponents, maybe they want to start toying with the idea of going three linebackers. Dorian Williams certainly acquitted himself quite well when he had to be on the field when Matt Milano was injured last year. And do you want to maybe experiment with that a little bit more? Of course, I haven't looked at, you know, none of us has taken the time yet to be able to look at that game a second or third time. But it's, you know, as you go down the road, especially if you see these guys in the playoffs, if you make the playoffs at this point, you know, you may want to consider some of these run heavy teams, some of these really big bulldozing, bullying teams, trying something new, trying something different, or certainly trying a different alignment against a team like this. But no matter how you slice it, you know, you're about to face the New York Jets, and we'll get to them a little bit later, where you're about to face the New York Jets with a mobile quarterback like Justin Fields. And so you're going to have to find a different way, find a different way to fly. But Jay, you're also going to have to find, you're going to have to tighten up in pass coverage too. Of course, we know that Max Harrison is on IR right now. And Tre'Davious White is certainly not ready to go. He wasn't ready to play on Sunday, which left Dorian Strong, the sixth-round rookie out of Virginia Tech, to have to play on the opposite side of Christian Benford.
Yeah.
And so now he acquitted himself well enough. But one way or the other, listen, Zay Flowers still running free in the secondary, I think, out there this morning down there in Orchard Park. So one way or the other, the Bills have a lot to clean up on defense, and they got to take a hard look at themselves in the mirror, starting with Sean McDermott and Bobby Babbage.
143 yards, career high for Zay Flowers on 7 catches, also had a touchdown. Ravens were not afraid to throw at Christian Benford. The DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, yeah, that's a remarkable catch, no question, but that's Benford in coverage. That's your number one cornerback. That's the guy you paid, and the Ravens went at him. 10 runs of at least 10 yards for the Ravens. That's insane. Three rushes of at least 30 yards. 8.2 per carry for Baltimore as a team, and that's with a 15-yard fumble that they recovered that hurts that team total. So here's the concern for me, Parent, is that this has been an offseason of rebuilding this defense. That was the focus, the first 5 draft picks on that side of the ball. The free agent acquisition, probably the marquee one, was Joey Bosa on that side of the ball. The extensions for Terrell Bernard and Christian Benford, who you are identifying as a part of your core, as answers to the defensive questions. Bernard, as your middle linebacker, finishes with 3 tackles in this game. How does that happen? Right. And so I think the concern coming out of this is we all know that the Ravens are good. We all know that they are probably going to be there in the playoffs. They said it as much in the locker room that there's a very good chance that they see this team again. The challenges will get easier, sure, for this Bills defense, but that does not lessen the urgency to address a lot of those issues. And as you mentioned, and we will discuss a little bit more in our final segment, they've got another running team coming up in the Jets with Breece Hall and especially with Justin Fields at quarterback, who presents a similar, I would say, not certainly not the same skill set of Lamar Jackson. Nobody has Lamar Jackson's skill set, but that will be a challenge for the Bills. We'll hear from Bobby Babich later Monday afternoon, Sean McDermott again on Monday, and then as well on Wednesday. And you can be darn sure that the defensive shortcomings will be addressed more in depth with both of those guys.
Joey Bosa, we all understand you're not paying him to play the run. You're paying him to rush the passer. He still has to be sound against the run. Christian Benford, hey, DeAndre Hopkins, been doing it a long time, huge hands, makes a great catch. Okay, tip your cap, okay? I'm going through a couple of these things to just say, okay, if you want to take each of these instances in a vacuum and explain them away, you can do that. Young guys, this is their first NFL, tons of young guys, just as you said, who are drafted, their first NFL game, their first taste of action against a really, really strong offense. Okay, maybe they learn, maybe they get a little bit better. And of course, you have two players who you brought in via free agency who are not available for the first six games. They're suspended. Maybe you bring those guys back and, you know, you get a little bit stronger defensively. And of course, you don't have Tre'Davious White at the moment or Max Harrison. Okay, all those things are true. By the same token, that's not going to help you get out of this mess 1 week from now. Mm-hmm. So you got to figure stuff out and you got to figure it out pretty quickly. Looking at the AFC East, we start with Miami. Miami looked like a team in flux starting out to going into this season. They remain looking like a team in flux, maybe a team heading for a really, really rough season. They lose big to Indianapolis, which does not exactly look like the 85 Bears themselves. So they're 0-1. New England loses to Las Vegas in their first game. They are at 0-1. And the Jets, they're 0-1 as well, but they put up quite a fight against the Pittsburgh Steelers at home. They lose on a 60-yard field goal by Chris Boswell with about a minute left, but they put up quite a fight. They lose 34-32. And, of course, the Jets are the team that's going to welcome the Bills into New Jersey on Sunday, at 1 p.m. Sunday. And so that's where we'll go next. You know, Justin Fields has a nice game. Obviously, if you put up 32 points on the board, that's something that has got to raise your eyebrows if you're a Bills fan, particularly with the way the Bills defense plays in their week one game against the Ravens. So with that, Jay, what are you looking for out of this game? What do the Bills have to do to tighten up and make sure they don't stumble against a team that they're supposed to beat?
Yeah, well, I mean, we got to start with the run defense, right? We talked about it last segment. Fields, 12 carries, 48 yards, two touchdowns. Matches Josh Allen in rushing touchdowns. Efficient, 16 out of 22, 218 yards and a touchdown. That's a really nice debut for him. I'll be the first to say I was not real high on the acquisition of Justin Fields for the Jets. I did not think he was more than maybe a stopgap to a first-round quarterback in 2026. We'll see, though. If he can perform like that, maybe there is a little bit something there that they can mold and work with. We know that they've got some talent, right? We see this team twice a year. Garrett Wilson, 7 for 95 yesterday. Breece Hall has killed the Bills at times. He went 19 for 107. So their playmakers on offense certainly showed up against the Steelers who, you know, listen, traditionally, what do you think of when you think of Pittsburgh? Strong defenses, right? That's their calling card. So, and then, you know, defensively, we know that the Jets have, they've got some guys, right? They've got a number one cornerback in Sauce Gardner. Quinnen Williams has been a thorn in the Bills' side for a long time. I think, you know, if you're looking at teams and defenses in particular that have given Allen the most trouble in his career, the Jets are very close to the top of that list. It's, you know, last year a little bit hot and cold in terms, you know, in the season just got away from them. It was a mess. The Aaron Rodgers fiasco, you know, the coaching staff, the GM, they're all out. You know, Saleh's out midway through the season. But it seems like they've got an adult in the room now in Aaron Glenn. I thought they were going to be a year or two away from contention. I still do believe that. I don't think this is a playoff team. But I also, based on their results yesterday, don't think this is a game that the Bills can overlook.
I agree. I think you couldn't have put it any better either, Jay, in terms of referring to Aaron Glenn, the new coach, as an adult in the room. Aaron Glenn is somebody who I saw up close and personal, certainly in New Orleans. He was on Sean Payton's staff for a long, long time. And I understand it's easy to say this now in retrospect, but when the Saints were looking to replace Sean Payton, they, of course, wound up with Dennis Allen. Aaron Glenn was somebody who they interviewed. Dennis Allen was always the front runner for that job. And again, it's easy to say this now, but I always thought Aaron Glenn was actually the right guy for the job. Players want to play for him, and he's that no-nonsense type of guy. But he's the guy who is going to instill discipline. He's going to demand a lot from you, but the players, he's that rare combination of, I'm going to hold you accountable, I'm going to work you hard, but the players still want to play for him too. And I think they respond to that, and they've already responded to that. I agree with you in the sense that they're probably a year or two away, but it doesn't mean that they're not going to pluck, you know, they're not going to pluck a few games away, that you know, they're going to be that team that maybe some teams, some favored teams at the end of the year say, geez, man, those guys got us. And that game is going to be the difference between us hosting a playoff game and not hosting a playoff game, or keeping us out of the playoffs or something like that. So they're going to be, you know, they're going to be that quintessential tough out maybe as we go down the road. Certainly he had a lot of success as defensive coordinator for the Lions, and, you know, having coached under Dan Campbell, I'm sure he picked up quite a few things. So, yeah. And by the way, not for nothing, Breece Hall, I think, is a great running back. Braylon Allen, he only got 6 carries for 9 yards, but I think if Breece Hall goes down, I've always been real high on Braylon Allen. Mm-hmm. I think as somebody who, you know, you slow down this one guy, or maybe Breece Hall, God forbid, goes down with an injury, that's somebody who you can't really underestimate either as a backup running back either. So yeah. Anyhow, you say all that to say these guys might be a tougher out than you suspect, compared to some of those other, you know, New York Jets teams from the recent past.
Yeah, one of those 6 carries does reach the end zone for a touchdown for Braylon Allen. But to your point, you know, this is a busy schedule here coming up for the Bills. You know, they get the big season opening win. Now you've got a divisional opponent, the Jets, and then a quick turnaround. You're back home on a Thursday night for another divisional game against Miami. So, you know, the Bills have the opportunity here, if they can string together 2 of these wins, to start 3-0 really quick, 2-0 in the division, 3-0 in the conference. That's exactly the type of start this team is looking for, but they cannot overlook the Jets. To get there, they've got to show up in MetLife Stadium on Sunday and get the job done. I will do that, as long with Lance Lysowski and Catherine Fitzgerald, our coverage team at the Buffalo News. We will be there on Sunday. Perrin will be back here in Buffalo, of course, leading, guiding all the coverage. And thank you very much for making your Further Review podcast debut. We will be back next Monday for another edition. For Perrin, I'm Jay. Thanks so much for watching. And remember to check out all of our podcasts, myself, Perrin, and Lance and Catherine, at BuffaloNews.com.